You don't have to stop davening. You don't have to stop learning. You don't have to stop doing anything you're doing. But when you're focusing on your midot, you know, Judaism is about transformation and growth.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. ELMAD.pardes.org.
Hello, welcome to all of our listeners. And I'm very excited to be sitting here with David Jaffe, who is a Pardes alum, correct?
That's right.
And has just written and published a book called Changing the World from the Inside Out, A Jewish Approach to Personal and Social Change. And we first of all want to say congratulations, because this has become a 2016 National Jewish Book Award winner.
Thank you very much.
It's so exciting. Wow. The first book, and it's already received such wonderful acclaim.
That was very exciting. Thank you.
I'm going to dive in without any sort of preamble. I will certainly say that Rabbi David Jaffe is an experienced educator who has lectured in many, many different environments and is a consultant to many Jewish organizations throughout the States and lectures, you know, nationwide and now worldwide. And we're looking forward. He's already taught on the summer program here at Pardes, and we're looking forward, hopefully this summer, to having him as a faculty member on our summer program. But I'm going to dive into the book, because we only have half an hour. We want to maximize every second. And I've got to say, this, the thing which you teach about, it's called personal and social change. But I think when you spoke last year on the summer program, you spoke about something called Musar, right, which is a whole, it's a movement. And I'll tell you, I really don't know that much about Musar. So I'm going to say the little bit I know. And then you're going to tell me really the real story about Musar.
Okay.
I've heard about a movement called Musar, which was developed by Rav Yisrael Salanter, which emphasized ethical perfection. And I know that it was controversial. I know that even yeshivas like Slobodka split apart on this. Mm-hmm. Some people felt that Judaism, should, Jewish study, should be about the intellect and about studying abstract Talmud. Right. And then along comes Yisrael Salanter with a movement which I think really spread like wildfire, right, and said that we have to sort of be embracing personal betterment and refinement of our characters. So can you tell us a little bit about this whole Musa movement, where it came from, what it did? It sounds almost like a revolution. And tell us this story.
Sure. Thank you, Alex. It's great to be here, and we're great to be back at Pardes. Musar actually goes way back further. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter started what we call the Musar movement, but really Musar is as old as the Torah itself. Leviticus, the holiness code, be holy because I am holy, that's a Musar teaching. Musar is the, it means ethics, instruction, learning. I like the idea of it that it's sumi rav aseh tov, turn from wickedness and move towards goodness. Sur, Musar, turn yourself in the direction that you want to grow. And so we have lots of teachings. The book of Deuteronomy is a Musar text of the ways we should be, right living. Pirkei Avot, the teachings of the great sages of the Mishnah, is another Musar. But what those texts don't give us are, how do you do it? How do you become more humble? How do you become more trusting or courageous or loving God? We don't know how the rabbis did it. They just became that way.
They just say, do it. And you're meant to figure it out yourself.
Figure it out. And they were that way, but we don't really see how they were writing in their journals or what they were doing. So in the 10th century, 11th century, we start getting a literature, Rav Sadia Gaon first, and then a book called Duties of the Heart in the 11th century Spain was the first Jewish book that really has meditations and practices of how to develop humility, how to develop trust in God. That kicked off a 1,000-year genre of literature we call Musar literature, about this ethical instruction and how do we grow as human beings based on Jewish wisdom. Fast forward to the 19th century, as you mentioned, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So Rabbi Salanter was one of the greatest Torah scholars of his day in Lithuania and Vilna. And he looks out at his Jewish world and he says, the Enlightenment is coming to the East. And most Jews here are not deeply learned. They haven't really internalized these teachings. They're going along, and people are keeping Shabbat, people are keeping kosher, because that's what everyone does. But he said, once modernity, with its ideas of equality and liberty and freedom and all these things come, if people don't internalize their Judaism really deeply, they're not going to be able to hold on. And so that's why he started the Musar movement, this movement to internalize the teachings of Torah and make Judaism really real and alive inside. And that his big innovation was that we can learn Gemara all day and Halakha all day, and we should, or some people should at least.
Okay.
But it's not going to really change your behavior unless you break it open and bring it down to the heart. And you have to involve the emotions in that.
You said before, you mentioned sort of meditations about this, but in terms of the how-to, I know there were like different methods. Like I know there were sometimes yeshivas who used to send their boys out to go and practice, you know, not getting angry or even practice being in situations where they would be humiliated or sort of almost embarrassed in order to... Is it sort of more of a practical art or is it something which is more, you know, I don't know, meditative? How does it work?
Well, it's very practical. Musar is a practical discipline. And again, the way that the language of the heart comes through practice. And so Rav Yisrael had a program of practice. And so at first it was also chanting and meditation. So he had what he called hispailus, which is a hitpa'alut, which is a practice of taking something or learning something from Misilat Yesharim, one of the classic Musar texts about, you know, being more humble or being more, having more dignity or that kind of thing. And then you would have people learn it like you would learn a Gemara. And then you have people chant it and use emotion and bring emotion to it and fervor. And that's where he got in trouble. Because some of the other Roshi Yeshiva looked at this and said, this is not normal. Like, you know, having people get all worked up and all emotional about what they're learning. And so Rav Yisrael advocated setting up what he called Batei Musar or Musar houses, where people would come and they would do this kind of chanting together with each other. And that was one of the practices. Now, his students then took this and developed other practices. And so, for example, what you just mentioned, the altar of Navardik, Rav Yosef Horowitz. He was really wanted people to develop intense sense of trust in God. And so he would give people these exercises. It was like a Jewish outward bound where he would, someone was afraid, right? Had fears. So he would give that person the task of going to a cemetery and staying all night in the cemetery saying psalms.
Wow.
And he'd put the other boys there to not let the guy out. Now, that we don't do that today.
That's, you mean that practice is not in your book?
That's not in my book. And that's, I may even mention it, but we have a kinder, gentler Musar today. But that was, Rav Yosef Yozer was also like particularly extreme,
right?
With these practices to build this, what Rabbi Sfi Miller, who translated Rav Yisrael's book, Or Yisrael, he calls bulletproof self-esteem. That you want to develop bulletproof self-esteem. And through these practices, really, we're able to do that. Other teachings like the in Kelm, was one of the other major Musar schools. They really work on Ben Adam Chaviro and treating us with dignity. So anyone who came in to that Kelm was greeted with the warmest smile and feeling like, wow, you must know me already. And they practice doing this.
Wow. So, you know, it's just really amazing because I think a lot of us don't realize that there is this whole wealth of tradition in Judaism,
yeah,
of really doing this in depth and, you know, really techniques and methodologies,
yeah,
of working on ourselves in order to really, you know, penetrate those knots within our personality. I really want to know, David, how you came to this. You write a little bit in the introduction, but I thought maybe you could share us some of your personal journey. How did you become a Jewish educator and a rabbi in general? Clearly, this is your passion. So how did you develop this passion for Musar and become, I think, what we might call you by now is a Musar master of your own, since you are teaching other people?
Well, definitely don't say that. But I'm a Musar practitioner trying to share this teaching with others.
So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you came to develop this interest.
Sure. And I'll talk about the Musar piece, and then maybe we could swing back on the social justice and social change piece, because the book really integrates those. But as far as the Musar, I'll say that I was a very spiritual kid growing up, real young, and then went away from it as in high school. And then a good friend of mine passed away when I was in college, and that opened up a whole spiritual search for me that I am very thankful led me to this institution.
But can I just ask you,
sure,
when you say you were a spiritual kid, what does that mean?
I'll give you two things. One is I used to go out into the woods and I used to talk to God when I was 10, 11 years old. And I only much later learned that that was actually a Breslov Hasidic practice to do that.
Hitbodedut.
So that was one. And the other is I grew up in a fairly secular home, but we were part of a conservative and then a Reconstructionist family. And we had a Haggadah, the book for the Passover, that had Hebrew, English, and transliteration into English. And one day my mom found me and I was cutting out little squares of paper and taping them over the transliteration and the English because I just wanted to have the Hebrew in my book.
Gosh, wow.
So that's that's what I mean. And then, but then high school, went away from that, other interests, and then came back, and then thankfully found myself here as in my early 20s, and really found Torah and Jewish observance and Jewish life to be central to me. That's not Musar, though. That was just kind of getting into Judaism. I'm very interested in growth and always looking for different ways of growing. And I had wanted to go to yeshiva for a longer period of time than I had done here. And after I got married, my wife wanted to come learn in Jerusalem. And I said, great, let's go do it. So we both left our work. We came here. And I went to a different yeshiva, a traditional yeshiva here in Jerusalem, that studies, you basically study Gemara and Talmud and Halakha all day, Jewish law all day. And the guys at the yeshiva wanted more spirituality, because you can only learn so much, like an ox goring, you know, that. They wanted spirituality. So the Rosh Yeshiva said, okay, we're going to have a 10-minute Musar unit that we're going to put in the beginning of the day. And we thought that was ridiculous. Like 10 minutes is going to be spirituality. But in that 10 minutes, every morning, we were studying a text. It's actually not a Musar text. It's Hasidic. It's a Netivot Shalom. But it was about the Midot and character traits and growing your character traits. And for the first time, I saw what you were just saying, that, oh my God, our tradition has practices and teachings about becoming more courageous and becoming more trusting and growing as a human being with like very specific things you can do. I was so excited by that, that I just was on fire. And then I wanted to learn everything I could after that.
Wow. That's really remarkable. You know, it's interesting because we've spoken about working on humility, mm-hmm. but you also talk about being courageous and mm-hmm. self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes think these two things are reflecting on different sides. One seems to be pushing the self down,
mm-hmm.
and one seems to be pushing the self up. And that's an... does Musa deal with that balance? Because on one hand, you know, some people push themselves forward and we're told to be confident and we're told to believe in ourselves. And it's very much a mantra of the modern world. And you can do anything and you can be anything you would like to be, right? You know, every Disney movie tells you that. And your college, I don't know, commencement speech will tell you that. But then on the other hand, we have these Jewish practices that we've mentioned of humility.
Right.
And it seems to me, you know, where does Judaism fall? Because, of course, somebody who's too humble can be not only self-effacing, but, you know, can minimize themselves. On the other hand, somebody in the other direction can be full of themselves.
Right. I have to clarify that about humility. The book I mentioned before, The Duties of the Heart, Rabbi Bachim Bakuda mentions, this is now 1,000 years ago, that you shouldn't have a false humility, like a humility where you basically really don't think much of yourself, and then you seem like you're acting humble. It's like, that's not humble. Like, don't fool yourself about that. That humility grows from having a real sense of oneself, and then you're choosing to giving space to others. So being in...
I'm not sure I understand.
So let me explain a different way. And this is something that Dr. Alan Marinus writes in his book, Everyday Holiness. And Alan Marinus is one of the great spreaders of Musar in this contemporary period, this renaissance that's happening right now, particularly in the liberal Jewish world. That humility is about being right-sized. It's about knowing when to take space and when to cede space. There may be times, it's very contextual, that you need to pull back. And there may be times you need to step up. And that stepping up is also a sign of humility. It actually brings it from a teaching from the Gemara in Brachot 6b, where I think Rabbi Chelba maybe says that someone who makes a makom kavoa, a set place for themselves for their prayer, is called a anav after they die, and a student of Avraham Avinu. And what Alan Marinus goes on and explains, that what is it about making a set place for your prayer that makes you humble? Because you're saying that this is my space, but that's not my space. I'm taking space, but I'm giving space for other people. And so humility is that balance, and it's going to change in any particular moment. So when we work with people on developing humility, we have them notice, okay, notice how you are in that classroom, and notice how you are in that meeting, and notice how you are around the dinner table. Are you taking enough space? Are you taking too much space? Try to notice that first, and then we give practices for, okay, so now when you're at the dinner table, try to say something first before, you know, your brother does or someone, and it push you out of your comfort zone.
It's a big challenge in marriage and in parenting.
Absolutely. And that's what we have to work on. Parenting, sometimes a lot of parents got to step back, especially as your kids become teenagers, and give them more space. And so Musar is designed, these techniques and practices are designed to push us out of our comfort zones and be able to be flexible with these Midot. Because the Midot, if you want to take a very oversimplified analogy, And again, this is, I think, something that Mirandis writes in his book. You have the sun as your neshama, your soul, and it's shining. And then you have the clouds. The clouds are your midot, your character traits. And those character traits are out of balance. They're going to block the sun. Now, it's still there. It's not away. Your soul is still there and trying to shine. So what the work of Musar is to align those clouds, those midot, so it shines.
Wow. Okay. This sounds really, really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like something which we really, really need. And I want to try and ask you to relate to this in two dimensions. You've written this powerful book, and it's been celebrated. Mm-hmm. How would you like to see it change the way people practice their Judaism? Do you see it maybe as a tool to revitalize Judaism? I think sometimes, and I think this is true both in the Orthodox world, I think from Haredi to modern Orthodox, people have spoken about a process called social orthodoxy, where people are sort of like socially Orthodox, but they're feeling their soul isn't really engaged.
Yeah.
And I think also in the non-Orthodox world, some people feel that it's not engaging enough. So do you see this as a tool for people to revitalize the Judaism for the year 2017, for the 21st century?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we have these incredible spiritual technologies in Judaism that have, for the most part, been not lost, but not, we haven't been accessing them and using them. And so we come out of the Shoah, and so many of the great teachers of these traditions, and I'll include Hasidism as well in it, because my book touches on that as well, but and Musar were lost. They were killed in the Holocaust, and we don't have those. We don't have those teachers. And so our Judaism has become much more social and all the kinds of things you're describing.
And purely intellectual in some cases.
Very intellectual, which, that's good, but it's limited. And we have these amazing technologies to help us be holistic Jews and be connected the head and the heart and be soulful. And Musar is one of those, and a very powerful one of those. And this book is a part of, there's other great things happening as well, but I hope this makes a contribution to us being able to regain these techniques so we could bring them into all our life. You don't have to stop davening. You don't have to stop learning. You don't have to stop doing anything you're doing. But when you're focusing on your midot, Judaism is about transformation and growth. And that's really like how you're living Jewishly. I think it would be a much more alive and powerful people. So God willing, this will be part of that happening in this world.
So I'm going to share with you, what does the butler say to Pharaoh, et chata'ai ani maskir hayom, I mention my sins today. It's really hard to be transformative all the time. We sort of get into our patterns of life, and we don't like turbulence. We don't like, change is really hard. And to constantly be working on ourselves, I know people talk about it, but sometimes I find that really, really difficult. I just want to sort of sit and know what to expect and live my life. I've got to get to work, and I've got to deal with lots of things. And what, I need this as well? is Judaism calling for us to be in a... you might say, that's exactly what you... But is Judaism want us to be in a constant state of having to be in state of self-examination? Is that something that an ordinary person can do?
Great question. We come around to Elul every year. So our rabbis, yes, Judaism does want us to be introspective when we pray. In our tefillah, we are being introspective in our tefillah. So yes, Judaism does want us to be introspective. I really do think that's the case. Musar takes it beyond that, a step beyond that. And so does Chassidut. Chassidut is Chassidut. It's beyond. It's extra piety.
Right.
So I would not say these are requirements, for every Jew to be involved in these things. And some people are going to gravitate to this more than others are going to gravitate to this. What Musar does is it takes what we do during Elul and during the 10 days of repentance, the Yomim Noraim, and spreads it out to the whole year. They're involved in it all year. And not everyone's going to, that's not going to be their thing, that they're going to want to do that. I would want to see people, though, bring it. It's a little more in. For the people who are yearning for this, we have it. And you can just go for it, and you can grow as much as possible. For other people who say, it's like enough already, I'm doing this. I would like to see people doing this maybe once a week and have it a little more in their consciousness, because it brings more soul. And most of us want more soulfulness in our life.
Right. I'd say also some of us hit kinks in our workplace with the people who are working with us or who we're supervising, kinks in marriage, kinks with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometimes we find that we actually need to work on things in order to help that shift.
Certainly. And this is a process. Also, what I want to mention is, too, the shared language when a family does this, like with my family this past year at Yom Yinareim, we said, okay, what are our midot for our family that we really need to, like, what are we good at and what we need to work on? And one was, I think kavod, they said, was good. We were pretty good at respecting each other, but simcha. We're lacking simcha. We needed some more simcha. So we have that now as a, you know, it's like a mission statement. You know, we have that for the family. And you can do it also in an office. I've done it at the school I work at, Gann Academy, where now we have almost all the faculty knows this language of the midot. And so then you can kind of, you know, was that humility? You know, you can kind of or you need to have some more savonut there, patience there. And it becomes a code language and you can go to deep places very quickly.
Right. So part of it is also actually being able to have a name for things so that you can work on them.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to maybe share with us a teaching that listeners can use and think about and apply to their lives. And I'm thinking about this particularly on the background of two things. We live in a sort of social media environment. And when I see sometimes the talkbacks and the on Facebook and what have you, I look at you through your chapters and humility, patience, dignity and honor, those aren't always the things we characterize our social media world with. And so I was reading it and thinking, wow, this is really potent for our age. I think also in terms of our political environment, which has become quite acerbic and quite dichotomized in the tensions that I think the current political situation is giving people in the United States. I think humility, patience, dignity, and honor. And I know you're only going to focus on one particular thing, but can you share one teaching that listeners can use and think about and maybe use to work on and apply them to our lives?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Before I do that, I just do want to say that I haven't talked much about it yet, but what the book does is it brings together these musar, these inner traditions, with social change and with actually doing tikkun olam in the world and making those an integrated practice, because so many Jews are engaged in tikkun olam, and this shows how you can actually grow spiritually while you're doing that as well. Wow. So it's that combination. So the practice I want to share can be seen in that light. This is a teaching from a 16th century Kabbalistic book called the Tomer Devorah, De Pramer Devorah. And it's about patience, actually, or savlanut, what's called bearing or forbearance. And the basic teaching is that God sends God's abundance and energy into the world all the time. And that's what sustains our life. That's why we're talking here right now. That's why everything that goes on is because that energy is coming into the world all the time. Now, we do all kinds of things. Well, I don't know about you, but I do all kinds of things that God may not like, make mistakes, other things, and God keeps that flow coming in all the time. So Rabbi Cordovero, Moshe Cordovero, who writes this book, says this is a trait, a midah, that we need to develop as human beings called savlanut, or patience, where when we feel insulted or when we feel like our will is being challenged, we still let our goodness flow to the other. We let our goodness flow to the other. So the practice is two things. One is using as we call a focus phrase, or we don't use the term mantra, but it's like a focus phrase or some type of a verse to have in your mind. You have in your mind and say it out loud, I will keep my goodness flowing to you. No matter what happens, I will keep my goodness flowing to you. And that's something that we say in the practice about 1-2 minutes out loud in the morning. I will keep my goodness flowing to you. No matter what happens, I will keep my goodness flowing to you. And then the practice, this would be the version of what they used to send the people into the cemetery. So we do something more gentle here. You find someone, one interaction you're having during the day that's really annoying to you. And so if we're talking about the political environment, it could be someone who really disagrees with you politically. And be saying this to yourself either with them, I'm going to keep my goodness flowing to you. I'm going to keep connected to you. I'm going to stay connected to you. And I've been just using this last night and in the last couple of days. I was here listening to people with very different perspectives on the conflict, the Arab-Israeli conflict in this area, listening to people on all sides of it and I disagreed on all sides with me. And I needed to go to that because I so quickly wanted to just, you know, shut them down and say how wrong they were. And I could feel my blood boiling. And using this practice, I will stay connected to you. I'll keep my goodness flowing to you. I'll stay connected to you. It just brings the temperature down. And it doesn't mean I'm agreeing with what the person's saying, but I can use the proper tone. And I think that type of connection is so important right now in this polarized environment. Even if we have deep disagreements, that's okay. Let's try to persuade each other. Let's fight. But let's stay connected while we're doing it.
Wow. I think that's an amazingly practical and useful I think it's something that every single one of us encounter in one environment or another. So I really thank you. And that metaphor that even while sometimes we're agitating God, he's constantly still pouring. Mm-hmm. We're still breathing. The sun's shining. Right. We still have all of this goodness that is coming to us and sort of modeling that sort of godly behavior.
Yeah.
It sort of sounds not only very practical wisdom, but a really amazing way of bringing holiness into our lives. So I just want to tell everybody, the book is called Changing the World from the Inside Out. The author is David Jaffe. It's been an amazing pleasure to be with you here today. And I look forward to you many future occasions where we'll hear your Torah in Paradise.
Thank you very much, Alex.
And I suggest that everybody, you know, can just, whether you're listening to this on the train or at home, you can just go into Amazon right this second and order the book. And I think you might find that it will certainly improve your lives. So this has been enriching and really inspiring.
Wonderful. Hope you enjoy it.
Thank you very much.
This Paradise Life is an original podcast production from the Paradise Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org, ELMAD.pardes.org.